In episode 129 of the Guitar Music Theory podcast, I have another installment of How Does This Song Work? Featuring The Power of Love by Huey Lewis and the News. Greetings, guitar engineers. Welcome to the Guitar Music Theory podcast. I am your host, Desi Cerna. And today I have another installment of How Does This Song Work? Featuring The Power of Love by Huey Lewis and the News. And this is a special installment because I'm joined by guitarist Matt Revere. Matt's a pro player who tours with Carrie Underwood, so it'll be extra interesting to hear his take on the song. I made a separate video where I demonstrate some of the parts from Power of Love and include tablature, so if you want to get a closer look at what I play, go to either YouTube or Facebook and search Desi Cerna Power of Love and you should find the video. And as always, before we get started, I want to invite all of my podcast listeners to enroll in a free course on my website, guitarmusictheory.com. Whether you're a beginner needing to learn the basics, or you're a more experienced player that wants to get better at soloing, finger picking, music theory, and more, I have a free course for you. Just go to guitarmusictheory.com, answer the question I ask you about your playing, and I'll send you a free video course calibrated to your current needs. Enroll in your free course now at guitarmusictheory.com. You can click on the link in the podcast show notes. Oh, and one more thing. Today's podcast episode is sponsored by Hosa Cables. And coming up later, I'll tell you how you can save 20% on your order at hosatech.com. We're just doing it. All right. We're recording. All right. Welcome back to the Guitar Music Theory podcast. Matt Revere.
How's it going?
It's going good. Matt, so I do this regular thing where I kind of break down and analyze a song. I call it, How Does This Song Work? And, you know, I talk about the song's key and chord progression and chords and scales and modes, if there's modes involved and that sort of thing. And I'm kind of analyzing the songs, much like I teach in my fretboard theory books and videos, as well as my book, Guitar Theory for Dummies. So it's kind of a popular thing that I do. And today we are taking a look at the song The Power of Love by Huey Lewis and the News. Are you familiar with it?
I am.
Yeah, especially because I asked you to be part of this a couple of days ago. And so you've been woodshedding on it. I heard you warming up to some parts of it. And this song was featured in the greatest movie ever released, Back to the Future. Are you a fan?
Yes, certainly a fan of the intro.
Of the intro?
He's got that tiny, funny-looking guitar, and he plugs into that huge speaker.
Yeah. My favorite part of the movie was, of course, when he starts jamming on Johnny B. Goode, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It kind of goes all Eddie Van Halen with it, and then the famous line, you know, you people aren't ready for that, but your kids are going to love it.
And they did.
They did. It was true. Yeah, it turned out to be true. Anyway, so yeah, this is a really cool song, and I recently had to learn this for this cover band gig that I picked up. I had to learn a couple of songs by Huey. That's kind of a funny name, like Huey Lewis and the News. Like we've heard that, and that makes sense. That's cool. But when you really think about it, like, oh, this is here. Let me introduce you to Huey. Hi, Huey.
I never thought about it like that.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's kind of weird just saying it like that. Mm-hmm. No offense. A great singer, great lyricist, great band, outstanding writers.
Totally.
Yeah. So I had to learn a couple of the songs. I started listening to the greatest hits, and I'm like, holy cow, these guys are great. Then I like pulled up like some live concert stuff, and I found one that was pretty good quality from about 20 or so years ago. And I'm like, these guys are really good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did kind of the 80s deep dive about a year and a half ago, where I was like super into all 80s music, you know, so I'm listening to Huey Lewis in the News. And then it occurs to me, I'm like, this guitar player is excellent, like really top notch. But like, I don't think he gets the notoriety that he should.
Chris Hayes. So he was like the main guitar player. I think they had a couple of people in the band that played guitar, but he was the main guitar player. And he was a writer. So he wrote this song. I think he was responsible for writing the main musical parts. And then,
Huey came up with the lyrics. And then I think another band member then contributed as well. Yeah, and just like great guitar tones and like really cool rhythm guitar parts. We're going to talk about this kind of chorused out, palm muted, just rhythm guitar part in the verses that I'm such a big fan of. So anyway, yeah, great band. We're gonna play through this song and kind of analyze it. Hey, you know what though? Before we do, what's going on in Matt Revere land?
Oh, nothing. We're about to start rehearsals for the big tour coming up with Miss Carrie Underwood.
Gotcha. So you've been playing with Carrie for how long?
A little over 4 years now.
4 years now.
Yeah.
And so yeah, tell me about this upcoming tour.
It's gonna be awesome. The new album is really, really great. I remember when we got to listen to it, I was thinking, this album's awesome. The guitar parts are fun. The songs are excellent. It's going to be a good tour.
Awesome. And any exciting places you're going to hit on this tour? Maybe places that you haven't been before, or maybe places you have been before, where you're like, I get to go back and play this town or this arena or something like that?
I mean, nothing competes with going home, you know. So going to Houston, can see the family. I always look forward to that.
So, and then do you usually get family to come out to see you when you're playing?
Yeah. My brother came to the Cry Pretty concert. That was the last tour, like the last big tour we did. And we're in this basketball arena, and I'm like, there's no way I'm going to be able to find them. And so I'm playing Where's Waldo on super hard mode. And sure enough, I look up and I see him walking up the stairs. I'm like, awesome. I just found my family. That's great. So now when
like
I'm playing, I get
50,
to kind of look
like
up
that.
There and try to find them. Yeah.
So that's great. I was going to ask you a question about that, but we're going to skip that. Because sometimes you have to be careful about things we talk about. Well, that's really cool. You know,
yeah.
I have never been out to see a Carrie show. So, are you playing Nashville?
Yeah.
When?
I don't know. I'm really bad about looking ahead at my calendar.
All right. Well, look for me walking up the bleachers. I'll be walking all the way up to the very top to the nosebleed cheapest seat section.
Love it.
That are probably still going to cost me $500 or something
awesome.
Ridiculous like that. Actually, I don't think Carrie's tickets are that ridiculous, are they?
I don't know.
Do they get pretty ridiculous?
I don't know. I guess it depends on a bunch of different factors, but... The important thing is that you'll be there.
I'll be there. all right. Well, shall we get into the song?
Let's
give people a little taste of this. So I'm pulling up a backing track. I'm not going to use the actual song here. Try to keep the copyright police off my back. and I'm going to play a little bit of the intro and kind of into the chorus just to remind people what this song sounds like. Oh, yeah, that's it. Got this backing track from karaoke-version.com. Here we go. All right. So that was part of the intro and the verse there. Well, it leads into the verse eventually with this part. Whoops. And this intro part is also the chorus when you get to the, you know, don't need money. And then eventually we're going to talk about the bridge section, which has some really cool changes. Matt's new favorite chord.
Desi's favorite chord.
And then we're going to talk about the solo. Give us a little taste of the solo here, Matt. You ready?
Okay.
One, two, three, four. Mm-hmm. just a taste now. All right, that was great. So let's take this back to the beginning. We're starting with the intro here. I've got a video posted to YouTube and Facebook. Just go to either platform and search Desi Cerna, Power of Love, and you can actually see me play these parts. Matt won't be in it, but I'll be in it, and I'll have some tablature and some stuff like that. and if you want to learn some of these parts or just take a closer look. So, all right. So, top of the song here, I'm playing a C power chord. Then I'm playing like a first inversion of it, C over E. Then an F power chord, G power chord, first inversion of a G power chord, the B and the bass there. So Matt, I'm just curious to know, and there's no wrong answers here, like what goes through your mind as you're learning a song like this and playing this? Like we were talking about earlier, you know, I never want to just memorize tablature or like just memorize where I'm placing my fingers for a song. I always want to understand what's happening to some degree, you know, mm-hmm. Because that helps me remember the song, recall the parts. I like to see how things fit together and everything. And well, that's what I teach as well. So as you play the opening to this song, what's going through your mind? What's the first thing you notice about it?
So, I mean, first thing I noticed was that tone it's gnarlier than you would think it is. Like it's pretty raspy.
In the original recording.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So when I'm learning a song, if I'm doing like a really detailed deep dive into a song, I'll start by just listening to the album, right? Not the whole album, just like the album version of the song, you know, all the instrumentation and everything. Because that gives you a pretty solid reference point of what the audience is ultimately going to be hearing in a live performance. Now, we live in a wonderful day and age with YouTube where you may or may not be able to find the individual guitar tracks, and thankfully, you can YouTube search Power of Love individual guitar tracks and make sure you don't find the Celine Dion version. I made that mistake in a sound check one time. and I'll tell you the story later. So you can find just the individual guitar tracks. And the first thing that I noticed was, man, that tone, it's pretty rocking.
Do we have to search individual or isolated?
I would look for isolated.
Let's look, shall we?
So while you're searching, I'll tell the story.
Tell the story.
So I'm playing with Scotty McCreery and my dear friends in that band, and we're doing a sound check. And I had a cover gig where I had to learn Power of Love, and I was like, guys, y'all want to play Power of Love? And they're like, sure. I said, well, I'll sing it, you know. So I pull up my phone, and I search Power of Love lyrics, and we start playing the song. The band sounds great, but my lyrics are not matching up with what they're playing at all. And then the drummer stops like mid-chorus and he goes, Matt, are you singing the Celine Dion Power of Love? I was like, yep, my
Which
bad.
Which is a totally different song.
It's a totally different song. And the lyrics do not line up with the Huey Lewis Power of Love.
Mm. So I just pulled up Huey Lewis in the News, the Power of Love, guitar only.
Right?
Cool, yeah. And that guitar there sounds almost like it's direct, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's cool. All right, someone posted it. I'm not sure how they got those tracks. Sounds like it's from the song.
Yeah.
Sometimes I've pulled up these files and I'm like, wait a minute. This is not from the song. Like somebody recorded themselves. Well, that's a great tip right there. And you're right. Like, you know, living in this day and age of YouTube, oftentimes we can find this stuff. There's software that helps you do it, but sometimes let someone do that for you.
The final level of deep diving.
Yeah.
In the bridge section, he plays this chord.
Yes.
Okay. It's an F13, right? And so another way to voice would be down here.
Okay.
But I'm like, well, there's a little different tonality when you're doing it closer to the nut versus kind of middle of the neck. It sounds a little different, you know? And so I had to go watch the live performances and see which voicing of that F13 he's playing.
Wait, how are you doing that? So we got root, there's a flat 7. Major third, sixth. Oh. Which means you could put a low F in there then. So you could go in that position. We're getting ahead of ourselves. Yeah. We'll get to the bridge later.
Yeah. But that's an example of if I'm really learning a song, I'll go, okay, well, where is he voicing it to get the tone right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So back to the beginning here. I mean, what's the first thing that jumps out of your mind if you're trying to, like, just get yourself, you know, oriented in the right key, you know? What are you thinking of? What key are you thinking right there?
Or C major.
C major, yep. And it's just kind of right out of the C scale. So, got a C chord. I'm playing the root and fifth, C and G. Then I switch to the root and third with the third in the bass position. So that's like a first inversion. C over what? E. Then an F power chord. There's your four chord. G power chord. There's your five chord. And then before you go from back to C, you play G's third B and put it in the bass position and do a first inversion there. So it's basically just a 1-4-5. It's like, if I take the inversions out,
oh, you're right.
It's basically just, you know,
one, four, five.
But they got interesting, they added more movement by putting the inversions in there. So this is one chord. That's still the one chord. Yeah. Four, five. That's still the five chord. I'm on the bridge pickup on my Stratocaster here, playing a Kemper. Matt has also got a Stratocaster with a humbucker in the bridge, also a Sunburst like mine, and he's also playing 3A Kemper. He's got the Kemper stage all in one unit.
I think we're wearing the same brand of T-shirt, too.
Are we?
I think so,
True Classic Tees?
Yeah.
Can't beat them.
Yeah. They really That's why we're such good friends.
They really make my biceps pop. So, yeah, that's the intro. So the first thing I'm thinking of when I play this song is, okay, I'm in the key of C major. So far.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we get into the verse. Well, this is still part of the intro, but this is going to lead into the verse, so I'm calling this the verse. And I'm going to switch settings on my guitar. I'm going to position four on the Strat with a neck in the middle. Clean sound, some reverb, and some chorus. And you have this part. I love this part.
Yeah.
It's so
cool. And this is roughly where Marty McFly grabs onto the back of the car when he's skateboarding.
Is it?
I'm just making
it up. Is this also the point where Huey... There he is again.
Yep. First name
makes his cameo in the movie.
And he does.
He cuts the band off. Remember they were auditioning.
That's him. That's
to like battle
right.
the bands. He's got the megaphone. He's like, "I'm afraid you're just too darn loud." So Marty's band has to leave. I'm telling you, it's the best movie of all time. All right. So no wrong answers here, Matt. Mm-hmm. When you come back to C to play this part, what are you thinking? Are you thinking anything? Are you still just thinking to yourself, "I'm in C," or
I'm thinking,
what do you make of this part?
That's really weird to go from C major to C minor, just between the intro and the verse. But
now, why do you say it's in C minor?
Because we got this, the flat three instead of in, you got an E flat there now.
That's right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
E flat instead of.
Yeah.
That's C major. Now we have.
If it was C major.
Yeah.
That'd be so weird.
Or, yeah, is that right? Well, it'd be more like, it wouldn't be
It's just
good.
Wrong.
It'd be wrong. Yeah, so yeah. we've got E flat in there. So this is kind of looks like a C minor chord or a C minor 7. And then you're taking a portion of it and moving it up a whole step.
Right.
Now, that makes me think about something else. Does anything come to mind when you do that sort of thing?
Are you talking about how a 1 over 3 in terms of a guitar voicing is very similar to a minor 7 shape?
No, that's true. What I'm thinking of is whenever I have like a minor seven and I go up a whole step, or a minor, excuse me, whenever I have a minor and I go up a whole step, that's usually a Dorian mode thing. You know? That sort of thing, you know?
Okay.
Or maybe you might think, whoops, I should have been in C, sorry. Little moon dance there, or maybe a little bit of the solo section to Light My Fire by the Doors. Two minor triads, you know. So Dorian mode. So I'm thinking, oh, that's kind of cool, like a Dorian mode thing, which would be, if you're thinking modally, means we're playing off the second degree of the B flat major scale. Give me some B flat major scale pattern for a second. And if you want to start on C, that's fine. But I mean, just, you know,
you like play a song in B flat?
No, just play B flat major scale pattern anywhere, up and
okay.
down the
gotcha.
Pattern. Right. Yeah, cool. So, I mean, we're making this sound far more Dorian mode than it actually sounds in the song. But actually, there's an important reason to understand this. When I was looking for music, I couldn't find any, like, good sheet music, and then I had to, like, find some videos online. I was struggling to work out the bridge part. That's what mm-hmm. really got me. I couldn't make out some of those chords, especially this sort of stuff. I was like,
right.
What is going on in there? Found a video of guitarist Chris Hayes playing a portion of this, and I was like in an interview, and I was able to work some of this out. Later, I discovered that I did find a fairly accurate tab transcription in the My Songbook catalog that's available to Guitar Pro users, if you're familiar with that guitar notation software. So the first thing I did when I pulled that up is I went to the bridge to see how do they have the bridge notated, and what. But I thought, why do they have the bridge notated in the key of B flat? They use the key signature for B flat. And I was like, why not? This is just C minor. Why not just use, you know, the key signature for E flat major and C minor, mm-hmm. relative major and minor? I thought, that's weird. Why B flat? Then later, I thought, oh, because earlier in the song, when you have this, since that occurred first, they used the key signature for B flat because they thought, okay, what key has a C minor in it and F major? It's like, it's kind of like going, you could also think of this as going from, you should think of it because it's what's happening in the song, C minor to F major. Like minor one chord, major four chord, you know, kind of Santana-esque. More of that Dorian mode stuff. So that's like, oh, that's why they used B flat, and that's why they just kept it through the rest of the song, including the bridge.
I mean, yeah, but the solo over that same section is clearly a C minor.
Well, but
you know,
yeah, Dorian mode, it's a minor mode though. And
yeah,
the solo is just pentatonic. You know,
I get how that's. Correct, but in my mind, I would never think of it like that.
Well, actually, the convention is typically when something is in a mode that you kind of disregard it, and uh-huh. you always the key signature is either a plain natural major or a plain natural minor. Mm-hmm. And I'm so used to that, I expected it. I thought I would expect them just to use the key signature for C minor, plain minor, even though it's in a mode, because that's typically what transcribers will do,
mm-hmm.
and they just kind of ignore the mode and say, nope, it's C natural. And, mm-hmm. of course, they have to use accidentals to get all the right notes in there.
Right. But I guess, like, the difference in the sixth in a natural minor and a Dorian would sound kind of weird, you know?
Yeah. Well, that... Yeah. That major sixth... Is what gives you the major third and the F chord.
That's supposed to...
Yeah. The minor sixth isn't going to sound good in this. But the guitar solo doesn't even, I think, play a sixth. So, oh, wait, does it? No, it does. It actually does. My bad. And it's a major sixth. We'll get to that. So this is a really interesting guitar part. And I saw in another interview or read in another interview, I can't remember, but guitarist Chris Hayes was just saying, man, this is just one of these things. Like he just, you know, made up on the couch, just sitting around noodling. Gosh, you know? So it kind of really fits neatly around like a C minor or C minor 7 chord shape. And there's some like fourth movement and stuff in there.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense when you learn how to play it. Like I see how he could just kind of come up with this. Mm-hmm. It kind of fits neatly around that shape. Then the bass line comes in around it. You know what I should do? I should play the bass. Before I get to that bass line, let me tell you about today's sponsor, HosaTech.com. Do you need to stock up on audio cables? Hosa guitar cables are built to last and used by touring musicians and session players worldwide. Most importantly, Hosa makes it easy to get all the cables a guitar engineer could need in one place. Guitar, patch, interconnect, mic, speaker, from workhorse essentials to top-of-the-line pro-grade hardware. Head to HosaTech.com now to stock up and use code GUITAR20 to get 20% off your order. That's HosaTech, HosaTech.com, and the code is GUITAR20, GUITAR, the number 2, the number 0. Head to HosaTech.com now to save 20% with code GUITAR20. Then the bass line comes in around it. You know what I should do? I should play the bass. You think I should play the bass?
You should play the bass.
I'm going to have you play. You're going to be Chris Hayes, and I'm going to be whoever the bass player is, which I do not know.
I wonder if when Chris Hayes is sitting there figuring out that part on his couch, if he's just wondering, am I going to get checks that are going to pay for my kid's college with this one guitar lick?
Yeah, right.
That's awesome.
So it's kind of like a synth bass on the song. Here's the bass. I'm plugged in now. That's coming in a little hot there, isn't it? Bass is a little hot. Let's turn it down. I'm going to add a fuzz to make it sound a little more like synth bass. So check out what's happening in the bass here. I'm starting on C, and then I go to E flat to F. So it's kind of like a 1-3-4 progression. And that matches up with what you're doing in the guitar there if we go slowly, right?
Yeah.
So right, I'm going to E flat, and so the guitar player is probably thinking, oh, C minor 7 there. But like you pointed out earlier, it's basically an E flat major chord in C form there. And then you go up a whole step. That's part of an F chord in C form. There's the F note. Let's do that again from the beginning. 2-3-4 C, E flat, F. Yeah, so that matches right up. And then when we finish it, it doesn't match up because the guitar play. Sometimes it's B flat to F.
Usually like coming out of sections?
Okay. Yeah, usually it's, what is it, F to G. And you're playing like C minor 7. And then you just lift your fingers for that, what is that, B flat?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Which makes the G minor 7.
Yeah. Huh. Right. But anyway, I like to imagine like how this was written in the studio, you know, with Chris Hayes having that guitar part and someone sitting down at the keyboard or something and just trying to mm-hmm. figure out a bass line that goes with it. And even though these notes here at the end don't like directly correlate, like it's like, okay, you're playing part of a kind of a C minor 7 or an E flat chord, but yet the bass is playing an F. Then you go to a B flat, and the bass plays a G. Okay, well, we can get a G minor 7 out of that. Whatever, we're still in key here, and it goes by quickly, and the movement just kind of works together. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like we're like if we sustain play that portion of that C minor 7 with the F. Yeah. Interesting sound there, but it goes by so quickly when we put it all together. 2, 3, 4. We can go da da. Yeah. But I think you're right. It actually does go to B flat F initially, doesn't it?
In the intro, because it's moving to the next section.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't think the bass follows it there, but you're right. So for that section, you're playing what? A B flat? Play B flat? With an F in the bass. And then you go to an F with a G in the bass. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like a 4 or 5?
Yeah. We have minor movement here. 1, flat 3, 4, 4, 5, 1. It's kind of basically what's happening here. So as opposed to the intro, if we go back to the intro again, remember we were in C major. Let's try that. I'll play the bass with you here. Ready? 2,
intro?
3.
What are we doing?
Yeah, intro. Ready?
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4. All the way back to the C major
intro.
Oh, that
one. Hold on. I got to change my tones for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here we go. 2, 3, 4. So this is straight major. Then we'll go to minor. Yeah. It's pretty cool. But it seems like seamless. It fits. Like, you don't listen as the listener, we're not like, whoa, wait a minute, what just happened?
Yeah.
They went from major to minor, but it fits. And this is actually pretty common in music composition. I talk about it in Volume 2 of Fretboard Theory when we get into modal interchange or modal mixture, how you can, when you're in a key, instead of just thinking one scale, you could think about parallel scales. You could mix chords from the C major scale and chords from the C minor scale at the same time, which seems like a contradiction, but actually it can work. And I'll give you examples. So anyway, that's what's happening in the intro. And then we get into the verse, and I'm going to unplug this bass and pick my guitar up here. And if you're learning this song because you're going to play it in a band or something, you do want to pay attention to that clean guitar part, how it finishes, because hold on, let me go back to lots of foot switches here. Sometimes it comes out of it like that, or sometimes it goes.
Yeah, that's the tricky part of this song.
Sometimes you have B flat to F.
Right.
And then sometimes you have, it stays up here.
Right.
So, you have to like pay attention to that. Once we get past the intro portion and the vocals come in, let's see if I can remember the variations. Should go like this. That might be the hardest thing to remember about this song.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, how that finishes. And I actually watched some live versions, and I think they played it that way live. So
good for them.
Because there's moments where it's like the bass is kind of doing its own thing, and I'm like, does it really matter how I finish this? You know? And you know what? I don't think it does in some cases. But when I watch some live versions, I'm like, well, apparently they were particular about it because it sounds like they finished it. Just like the recording in the live versions that I saw, at least. Shall we move on to the chorus?
Sure.
You got any other insights?
No, man. That's great.
All right. You think I should use that bass fuzz at church this week? I'm thinking, I'm going to try to work it in. All right. So when we get to the chorus, we're back to C major. So we're going back from minor to major. This is just like the intro. You want to play it, Matt?
Sure.
All right. Here we go. Here's the chorus with no vocals with the backing track. I saved you there on that transition back to that part.
That's because you had the pickup dialed up. Yeah. I have a hard time, like, on a five-way switch, like, getting to the exact tone in time. Yeah. Always freak out.
You know, I'm using position four here for this. I think that sounds good. But I don't know. It could be position two.
I think four sounded really good.
And
I don't know.
When I watched some live versions... He was playing some like double humbucker guitars, kind of like we saw in that one video, and so where he was using some different splits.
Yeah,
you know, so it's got that single that kind of double single coil sound, but I'm not sure what he would have tracked this on. You did. Let's listen to this. This is the guitar only. It's a little warbly. Someone must have used software to try to eliminate the frequencies of the other instrumentation. By the way, that would be a software called, where is it? RipX, R-I-P-X. They sent me a version of this to try out, and I might talk about this in a future podcast. Something where you could drop an MP3 in there, and you're supposed to be able to isolate instrument tracks, but the way it works is the software is just going to kind of like divide things between frequency ranges. It does not work quite as well as I hoped it would work, but it does work to some degree. Whoever put this track here, though, together. That sounds better than the results I've been getting. But maybe because they learned how to use more of the features of the software. I'm not sure.
It's clean enough to get all the information we need.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess my first guess would be that it's a Strat position four. But it could be position two. It could be...
Try three. Let's just see what three sounds like.
Right in the middle?
Yeah.
That's a middle pickup by itself. Or I could do this. I can do bridge and middle. Which is probably more similar to what a double humbucker guitar would do if you're in a middle position with some sort of split or tapping involved. So
final answer, we don't really know. My vote goes to four or three.
Yeah. Yeah, it's right. That's why I chose four. Mm-hmm. But it's like, whatever. It's like, that's close enough. You got a good clean sound. I put some chorus on there. I don't know if he's using chorus in the track, or it sounds like it's just double track.
Mm-hmm.
That's like real chorus effect because you have, you know, layered guitar, probably split left and right. But anyway, we just played through the chorus here, and we're back to the key of C. Nothing new here until we get to the end. Right here. So we were in the key of C, and then all of a sudden they throw a B flat in there. And you know, if you play the C scale, there's no B flat in the C scale, so where does the B flat come from? This is what music theorists would call modal mixture, modal interchange, borrowed chords.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably what Matt doesn't even have a name for, but...
We just call it a flat seven.
A flat seven? Yeah.
Yeah. I got a hand gesture for it.
Yeah. Is that flat seven?
If you're in a bar gig, you can do the thumb to the side, flat seven.
Really?
Yeah.
What's this?
Great job.
I put my thumb up. What's this? Thumbs down. It's like, don't come back. Yeah, take your stuff and don't come back. So when you are in a major key, most musicians realize that even though the flat seven is not part of the major scale, that it's very common. And it's considered a chord in the key. And the reason is because if you study like the modes chapter in the book, you know that there are three different major modes in a major scale. The first one, which is called
Ionian.
All right. Matt's getting nervous here. And the fourth one?
Lydian.
Yes. And the fifth one?
Mixolydian.
Right. And the most commonly used one is Ionian. That's the plain major scale. But Mixolydian with the flat seven is actually pretty common. Mm-hmm. Lydian, less common.
Yeah.
It comes up here and there. I give you some examples in the book. It's kind of a cool sound. So when songs are in a major key, they're either going to be using that major seven or the flat seven. And oftentimes they will use both because, you know, musicians just realize that, hey, when you're in a major key, you can make use of both those sevens. And that's what's happening here. So everything here is major scale until that B-flat comes in. And you've got the flat seven, B-flat. And if we're going to think about this by numbers, we already determined that this is one inversion of the one chord, four, five, inversion of the five chord. And then this would be flat seven, four, whoops, flat seven, four, five. So that's how the chorus works.
Every time I do that, I just want to go, that's the power of the...
I'm afraid you're just too darn loud. All right, we're going to move on.
Is it time?
It's time for the bridge. Take it to the bridge. Let me play through this for you. Got my track up here. And it sounds like this. So this was the trickiest part of the song for me. Not initially, like, you know, I'm like, uh-huh, okay, yeah, I'm good. Then all of a sudden, I was like, whoa. I mean, it's easy. Mm-hmm. Now, when I just played that here unaccompanied, but when you're listening to the whole song and it's a dense mix with all this instrumentation, you're like, what? I could tell that it was going to an F major chord. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, maybe it's a dominant seventh.
Yeah, there, like,
you know. What you see in some tab, it just has like an F7 there.
Yeah. Perhaps the mistake I made was starting off with the oscillated guitar tracks. And so when that chord came up, I was like, and I'm writing a little chart down, writing down these chords, and I get to that one, and I just wrote a little question mark. I was like, what on earth is this? And then as soon as I go back and listen to the full song with the bass, it's like, oh, we got an F in the bass. Okay, that kind of gives me a flag in the ground of how to name this chord after that. And I was like, oh, it's an F13, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a tricky one.
So F13, what I'm actually playing here, it is an F chord, like Matt said. The bass player is firmly planting that flag with an F, but the guitar is playing E flat.
Flat 7.
A.
3. 6.
D. And then 1. F. So the guitar players, so that's flat 7, major 3rd, 6th,
13,
1.
Right.
Yeah, 6 six could be either 6 or 13, depending on if you're counting in the first octave or the second octave. Oftentimes when there is a 6th in a chord, it's treated as if it's an extension, and the next octave, and it's called 13.
And I've heard a lot of people say that in order to get numbers above 8, you have to have a dominant 7. I don't know if everyone abides by that rule.
Oh, yeah. Actually, no. I think you're right. Yeah. So, like, technically, don't quote me on this, people, because I think this convention is a little – I actually ran this by the technical editor for Guitar Theory for Dummies, my friend Sandy. Alexander Sandy Williams is his name. I think the convention is like theoretically you shouldn't be adding those or something to the first octave, if, you know, because it's going to interfere. It's too close to a root third and fifth or seventh. So if you're going to add a fourth or a sixth, you'd extend it to the next octave. And then if you count into the next octave, four turns into an 11, six turns into 13. But like in reality, that's not what musicians do. Musicians often add those intervals in the first octave, like we're like we're doing here, you know. So then it becomes, well, what do we call it then? Do we call it a sixth because it's in that octave, or do we follow the naming convention? Like you said, it's got a dominant seventh in there, so do we call it the 13th? I don't know what the rule is, and I've talked to different people about it. I don't think there is a rule.
What about the the big question in church chords, like an A add 9? There's no dominant 7 in it, you know?
And so I call that a sus 2.
That's what I would.
Yeah.
But I've seen it written down, A add 9. I'm like, I don't think it's a 9.
It'd have to have the third in there. You'd have to do this. That's A add 9. Because that's an A with an added ninth. But if the major third is taken out, if you suspend the third, then it's A sus 2. So that can be a little easier. But I like your idea that, okay, we have a dominant seventh in here, so let's just call that D note a 13th. I can't even keep this straight. Here's the thing, people. You don't really need to keep this straight.
No.
Like, you know, Matt and I can look at this and go, oh, okay, we've got a 6th, 13th, they're the same, whatever.
Yeah. We're not even talking theory. Yeah. We're talking naming, you know? Yeah. And to the listener, it's the same.
Yeah, and we're also just talking about what's making sense in our mind. We can look at this chord and make sense of it without really being sure exactly what we would name it. It gets a little difficult for me if I had to tab something out because I'm like, what do I name it? I have options here. And now that we just discussed this, I might have to, maybe I might change how I have it named. Let's pull it up here. I called it F7 add 13. Oh, because it'd have to have the ninth in there to be a 13. Because if it's a 13 chord, it'd have to have the 7th, 9th, and 13th because that is the convention. But here's the thing. That convention is not always followed, particularly on guitar. We just don't have enough strings or fingers to have a root, 3rd, 5th, 7th, 9th, 13th.
How about this? If I were to say Desi play G13, what would you play?
Yeah, I would use this fingering, which with, only has...
With no 9th.
Right, it's just got a root, flat 7th, 3rd, and 6th or 13th, right.
Yeah, and to you listeners, if you're making these complex chords, the first interval to go is going to be the 5th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually the 5th is left out. Yeah. So, here's another thing. Sometimes when I think about a chord like this, we're back to our F13 or F7, F13 or whatever. Honestly, what I usually think of is, oh, it's some form of F dominant seventh, but I've got a sixth in there.
Yeah.
I've got a 13th. That's what's going on in my mind, and that makes sense to me. But I can't always name that in tablature. I can't just write up above the chord, oh, just think F dominant seventh with a sixth or 13th.
You
in
need
there.
A bigger sheet of paper.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Anyway.
So there's another chord in here that has a pretty tricky thing to name. This guy here.
Well, hold on. Then we have A flat major 7, and then we have.
That's another tricky one to name.
This one. Let's talk about the bass line for a second here. So the bass is going. So that's E flat. Then when you go to the G chord, bass has the D in the position, fifth in the position, fifth in the bass position to C minor. And by the way, we completely just overlooked like the G chord. Why does the G chord work in there? Like E flat, sure. C minor 7, sure. Relative major and minor. Where does the G major come from?
It's the 3 major of the key. And the key of this is going to be E flat major.
And it's just creating that harmonic minor thing, like C minor.
Oh, you're in that school of thought. Whenever I think of soloing over a 3 major chord, I always go with Spanish Phrygian.
Which is, same thing. Right. You're just playing a mode of the harmonic minor scale,
mm-hmm.
right? You're playing C harmonic minor, but you're thinking G.
Yeah, because we're in a G major.
Yeah. So I just think C harmonic minor, but
that was Guitar Center by a music school, by the way.
Yeah,
that's what that sound was.
So, little harmonic minor, like a dominant push to the C minor. Then we've got this. Oh, why F here? This is what perplexed me initially.
A 2. An E flat.
It's like a dominant. Is it a secondary dominant? Let's come back to it. Don't let me forget about
this.
I want to talk about that. So, and then from here, A flat major 7. Okay, this makes sense because I'm thinking now just like C minor, E flat major, those general keys. So if that's the case, E flat major, 4 chord is A major 7. I'm good with that. And then this next chord, I initially thought it was a E flat with a G in the bass, which makes sense.
But you heard that F?
Yeah, it's a little trickier than that.
Yeah. I was listening to that going, oh, there isn't. It's an F. It's not an E flat.
So when I saw a video of Chris Hayes playing this, he played this. It's basically a C minor 7 chord, but you just take your ring finger away, take the fifth away, and then you have what? C, F, B flat, E flat. And so that's like a C minor 7, but you got a 4 in there.
With the G in the bass?
And then the bass player put the G in the bass. If you put the whole thing together, sounds a little muddy on guitar.
We talked about this. You probably wouldn't want to put a fourth that close to the bottom, and that C is functioning as a fourth.
Or leave this G. Leave the C out, and just go. That sounds cleaner.
Yeah. Which on the track, I don't think he's playing that C. The lowest note he's playing is that F.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay. In which case, you can think of it as, honestly, you can think of it as an inversion of the E flat, the third in the bass. But it's also got an F in there. Or you can think of it as going back to the C minor with G in the bass and that F in there. Whatever. It's diatonic, though. It's straight from the key if we're thinking E flat, major, C minor. Then from here, play an F note for me, low F.
So awesome.
That's a chord right there. Now, when I was working this out initially by ear, just with the recording on, I was like, I just played F minor 7. I realized this is some form of F minor 7 with some other stuff in there. And the only way that I figured this out, I think I figured out from watching this video. I found this video online, and maybe since I brought it up, I should mention it here as I was kind of doing a deep dive. It's called The Power of Love, Huey Lewis in the News, Huey Lewis Interview, and it was done by like some Asian company. There's like Asian
letters that we don't understand.
Letters and narration and stuff. But it's really cool because in the video description, they have all these timestamps of where the different members had little interview segments. And so I could just kind of quickly scroll through this to see, hey, did he by chance mention anything about these chords? He doesn't actually talk about them, but there's this very brief clip where he's playing them right here.
リードギターとしてメンバーとなったクリス・ヘイズは後にヒューイたちとパワー・オブ・ラブの作者となる。
Okay. And sometimes you can see his fingers and sometimes you can't. But it was nice to see his fingers on a few shapes, but it was nice to actually just hear him play the chord without any other instrumentation. Mm-hmm. So I could hear that, oh, he was actually doing that. And then later I found that tab in my songbook available through two Guitar Pro users. So, yeah, this is tricky. All right, we're in the second portion of this bridge here. A flat. I'm going to call this, what did I call this, guys? This gets complicated here. I called this C minor 7 add 11 / G. But this is one of those chords where you could look at it from different angles and name it different things. And different players would probably give it a different name.
Right.
If you're thinking of it as a C minor 7 with a G in the bass and an F in there, then sure, you'd call it C minor 7 add 11 because it doesn't have the 9 / G. And then we get to this gorgeous thing. So the bass player is playing an F here. Are you playing F for me?
Sure.
So there's our root F. Then here's the fifth. There's the minor third. That's a fourth. Flat 7. 9. So we've got 7, 9, and 11.
Just all of the notes.
Yeah. So couldn't we just call that F minor 11?
I mean, I feel like you'd lose some of the color. Because, like, if I saw F minor 11, I go, oh, it's easy, great. You know, but
well,
it wouldn't be this.
Okay, but that's a fingering that we guitar players are used to. I do it up here
right.
for F minor 11. In this case, though, what? We're just playing the root, flat 7, minor 3rd, and there's the 11. Mm-hmm. But technically, when you add extensions, you're supposed to have the previous extensions. Again, this is like mm-hmm. the convention in traditional music theory. So if you're playing an 11, shouldn't it also have the 9 in it? And so
I do not abide by that rule.
All right. Matt does not abide.
If it is correct, I mean, maybe. But as I demonstrated, I said Desi play a 13, and there was no 9. There's no 11.
Let's see what our friends at Google are saying. According to some search results here, it should have 1, flat 3, 5, flat 7, 9, 11. So wait a minute. This could just be called, what did I call it? Oh, I called it F minor 11. Okay. Well, that explains why I put that in my tab. Yeah, so I guess that's just would actually be, if we have the bass player playing the F in there, because I don't have any F in here. I've got everything but the F in this chord version, and Matt is playing a low F for me there. So I think that this actually is one way that a guitar player could actually play a minor 11 chord with all of the actual proper extensions in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where did Chris Hayes learn this? Like, that's what I want to know. Like, was he listening to jazz? Did he have some, like, jazz chord book or something? And then kudos for him for actually putting this into a piece of music that is palatable to your mm-hmm. average pop rock listener, you know? Because sometimes, yeah. Sometimes when you get into like this sort of stuff, sort of jazzy stuff, I'm not knocking on jazz, but sometimes it's hard for an average listener, including even me, to mm-hmm. listen to it. I'm like, okay, that's interesting, but oh boy, you know. Yeah. So I always love it when these sort of elements come up in a song that was a number one hit, you know.
Yeah, and we keep listening.
Yeah,
yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, you can watch the video, folks, but. To see actually how I'm playing this, and I've got some tab and stuff for you there, but it's just beautiful. So let's go back to the beginning here. You want to be the bass player for me, or do you want to play the chords? I'll be the bass player.
Okay.
Should I get the fuzz bass going again? I'm just going to use my guitar here. You ready?
Let's see if I can remember these chords in time.
1, 2, 3, 4. climbs back up, and then it finishes with, and that's just a G suspended.
So
to G.
I think the lowest note in that chord is an F. I think he's got a flat. No, he's got a, like a flat seven.
Oh, okay, sure, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, again, is like, that would be the five chord if you're in C harmonic minor. So it's creating that dominant push that brings you back to C, mm-hmm. which is perfect because it goes back into that.
So good.
It's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it really is. And that brings us then to the solo. The solo is played over this part. And the bass is doing the... So we're thinking C minor. And Chris Hayes basically just played C minor pentatonic on this. And of course, the blues scale can be worked in there. The flat fifth. And then there's a little bit of this stuff going on, which most people just consider to be the minor pentatonic, where you're taking that bend on the third string and you play it together with the second string, you know? Well, technically, that puts a major sixth in there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the major sixth from our Dorian mode.
Yeah.
Technically, but this is often done regardless of whether you're...
It's just guitar stuff.
It's just guitar stuff, yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, it's a great solo, and, you know, it's got kind of a Stevie Ray Vaughan kind of Texas blues vibe to it,
totally.
Doesn't it?
Totally.
When you listen to it?
And I apologize for only knowing the first five notes of the solo, everyone.
I didn't learn it either, so... what I did is I like listened to it and I'm like, okay, it's pentatonic. It's kind of a Stevie Ray Vaughan. Let's see, what sound did I use for it? I think I might have used this. It's kind of a Stevie Ray Vaughan thing, you know? No? Yep. So I kind of just like got, you know, the basic idea and I just kind of improvise.
Yeah.
Shall we give them a sample? Then we'll get you to do this, Matt.
Okay.
See what I can come up with here. So.
That was awesome.
Now this Strat is completely out of tune because I used the tremolo bar.
But I mean, worth it, right?
Yeah. we're going to give Matt a pass at this. All right, Matt. Don't let me down. That was great. You know what I realized?
Hmm.
I actually played the solo in picket position 2. I should have. I didn't just then, but that's how I did it when I played it live. Because I think that's what he was using. Is that what you were just using?
That's 3.
Oh, you're in 3.
Yeah, I'm in 3.
You're right in the middle. I need another pass in picket position 3. It's like we're in the studio here. Yeah, can I get the solo from measure 50, please, again? Here we go. I had another idea. I didn't.
Great timing.
I'm doing one more pass. Then I need to give you another pass. I wanted to work in the.
It's great. I love it.
You want to take it again, Matt, just for fun?
Oh, for fun, sure.
All right.
Get my my
Don't
Eddie
hold
tone.
Back.
Okay.
Awesome. That's why Matt's paid the big bucks, everyone.
Desi, you
bringing out
great.
The firepower. So let's talk about this. Like, we're just having fun here mm-hmm. and just kind of improvising and stuff. So the minor pentatonic is one of the most common scales used if you're playing rock and blues mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And you and I, we've learned tons of songs and solos. So we have quite a repertoire of licks and phrases and ideas. So we can hear a song like this and say, okay, I don't need to work this out. I can just play something similar and just draw from all the minor pentatonic songs that we've played. So because some people might be listening to this saying, how can you guys just go like that? You know, like, I wish I could do that. And that's one of the most common questions I receive too. Mm-hmm. Like, how do I learn how to improvise? How do I learn how to solo? And so my first question for those people would be, well, how many solos have you learned? And oftentimes they haven't learned many or any at all. And they're like, well, but I know the scale. I'm like, okay, that's great. Mm-hmm. You need to familiarize yourself with those patterns first, but then you have to like start learning not just solos, but riffs and any sort of part that a guitar player would play in a song that uses the pentatonic. Like, you got to get to know how they actually use that musically in songs. And yeah you know, so you learn how like players are going to you know, bend the fourth up to the fifth and come back down and resolve on the tonic, in this case C, right? And do that in different positions.
Yeah.
And so, you know, learn which notes they bend. Learn how they work that flat fifth in there.
So a bit of advice I would give players that are trying to learn how to solo better is to listen to guitar players that play attainable licks. I know it's a weird thing to say, but and, I mean, there's different levels. You know, like, you wouldn't listen to Steve Vai and be like, well, I want to learn the basics of soloing because he doesn't do a lot of things that are grabbable to understand as the basics of soloing. The best example I could give would be Mike Campbell from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Great.
He plays excellent lines that are very graspable.
And I have a soloing course available. You won't always see it on my website, but if you're on my email list, I do mention it, where I kind of teach you like some of the most important approaches you need to know in guitar soloing, how to play in the major pentatonic, minor pentatonic, how to play in the style of some familiar songs and familiar artists. So take a look at that. Learn all that stuff. Memorize it first. You're just copying it first, but then all those licks and phrases and ideas will become part of your playing and part of what you can use when you start to improvise or compose your own solos. Well, Matt, we have pretty much covered this whole song. We haven't walked people through it from beginning to end, but we talked about the intro and the verse and the chorus and the bridge and the solo. What are our parting thoughts here?
It's a great song.
Great song.
Yeah.
You'd great be lucky. Name.
Yeah.
Huey.
Huey. We would be lucky to see this song on an 80s cover gig set list.
Yeah. And so as I have been like listening to the greatest hits, and I had also had to learn the song Stuck With You, you know, I should probably do a podcast on that. I did a short video on that. Do you know that song? Did you ever played that one?
No, I never heard it until you played it.
Really cool. Mm-hmm. Guitar work in there, and there's some neat like chord changes and stuff in there too. Chris Hayes wrote that one. Key change.
Whatever happened to the key change? Nobody does it anymore.
And then when it comes out of it. Yeah, really cool stuff. Yeah, that guy, Chris Hayes, I mean.
He's great.
He is great at chord work and stuff. So, yeah, a lot of admiration for him in the band and for Huey. We really can't say enough about Huey. We really can't say Huey enough. All right, how should we wrap this up?
I don't know.
We're going to wrap this up with one more pass at the solo section. Matt and Desi going at it at the same time. Here we go. All right, podcast episode 129 is a wrap. I want to say a special thanks to my guest, Matt Revere. You can see him out on the road with Carrie Underwood on her Denim and Rhinestones tour. Just look for the guy with the big muscles wearing the True Classic t-shirts. Well, there's a free plug. True Classic, please reach out to me for future ad spots. I also want to extend my sincerest apologies to any podcast listener out there named Huey. You know what? It's not a silly name. And when you have a name like Desi, the last thing you should be doing is making fun of somebody else's name. Don't forget that you can view the video I made for this lesson. Just search Desi Cerna Power of Love on Facebook or YouTube, and be sure to like, comment, and share. By the way, the best way to share my videos is on Facebook. Share one of my Facebook videos to a Facebook guitar group, and the video will actually get put in front of guitar players who are likely interested in my content. And speaking of videos, don't forget to enroll in a free video course at my website, guitarmusictheory.com. I have courses on the basics, practicing bar chords, using finger picking, playing guitar solos, and more. Just answer the question I ask you about your playing, and I'll direct you to the best course for you. Enroll in your free video course now at guitarmusictheory.com. You can click on the link in the podcast show notes. And finally, don't forget that you can save 20% on your purchase at hosatech.com by applying the coupon code GUITAR20. All right, guitar engineers, thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, give it a 5-star rating, and leave a great review. Then keep playing and stay tuned for more.